The British ambassador's residence had been built during the reign of the old emperor Haile Selassie, before Mussolini's invasion in the 1930s. Set on the outskirts of the town, it was an example of the better colonial architecture, with a thatched roof and wide verandas. The lawns, tended by a host of gardeners, were wide and green, contrasting with the brilliant crimson of the poinsettia. The mansion had survived both the Revolution and the War of Liberation that followed. At the front entrance, Geoffrey handed them over to an Ethiopian butler in a long, spotlessly white shama, who showed them to adjoining bedrooms on the second floor. Nicholas heard the bathwater running in Royan's suite next door as he lay in his own brimming bath, sipping a whisky and soda and twiddling the taps with his big toe. Then there was the murmur of the doctor's voice from next door as he attended to Royan's knee. Geoffrey's dinner jacket was loose round his waist and too short in the arms and legs, and his shoes pinched, added to which Nicholas was in need of a haircut, he realised as he surveyed himself in the mirror. No help for it now, he decided with resignation, and went to knock on Royan's door. I say, he exclaimed as she opened it. Sylvia Tennant had loaned her a lime-green cocktail dress that set off Royan's olive skin marvellously well. Royan had washed her hair and left it loose on her shoulders. He felt his pulse accelerate like a teenager on his first date and laughed at himself. You look absolutely scrumptious, he told her, and meant it. Thank you, sir, she laughed back at him. And you look very dashing yourself. May I take your arm? I was hoping to carry you. Addictive activity. Those days are over, she told him, and brandished the carved ebony walking stick with which the butler had provided her. She used it on her bad side. As they started down the long corridor, she asked in a whisper, What is the name of our host? Her Britannic Majesty's Ambassador, Sir Oliver Bradford, KCMG. Which stands for Knight Commander of St. Michael and St. George, right? She asked. No, he corrected her. It stands for Kindly Call Me God. You're impossible, she giggled, and then became serious. Did you manage to send the fax to Mrs. Street? It went through at the first attempt, and she acknowledged. Sends you her salams and promises to have some information about Pegasus Double Pronto. It was a mild evening, and Sir Oliver was waiting to greet them on the veranda. Geoffrey hurried forward to make the introductions. The ambassador had a bush of white hair and a red face. Geoffrey had warned them about him and his view on troublesome tourists, but his hostile frown started to fade as soon as he laid eyes on Royan. There were a dozen other guests for dinner, apart from Geoffrey and Sylvia Tennant, and Sir Oliver took Royan's arm and led her around the group, introducing her. Nicholas trailed along behind them, resigned by now to the fact that Royan had that effect on most men. May I present General Obeid, the Commissioner of Police, Sir Oliver said. The head of the Ethiopian police force was tall and very dark-complexioned, suave and elegant in his blue mess uniform. He bowed over Royan's hand. I believe that we have an appointment to meet tomorrow morning. I look forward to that with the keenest pleasure. Royan glanced at Sir Oliver uncertainly. She had been told nothing of this. General Obeid wants to know from you and Sir Nicholas a little more about this business in the Abbey Gorge, Sir Oliver explained. I took the liberty of having my secretary make the appointment. Just a routine interview, I assure you both, Dr. Alsimer and Sir Nicholas. I will take up very little of your time, I promise you that. Of course, we will do everything that we can to assist you, Nicholas told him politely. What time are we coming to see you? I believe we are meeting at 11 in the morning, if that suits you. A most civilised hour, Nicholas agreed. My driver will pick you up at 10:30 and take you down to police headquarters, Sir Oliver promised. At the dinner table, Royan was seated between Sir Oliver and General Obeid. She was pretty and charming, and both men were attentive. Nicholas realised that he would have to become accustomed to sharing her company with other men. He had had her to himself for much too long. For his own part, Nicholas found Lady Bradford at the other end of the table rather heavy going. She was a second wife, 30 years younger than her husband, with a pronounced London accent and an even more pronounced common streak, with a mane of dyed blonde hair and an improbable bust which overflowed her sequined décolletage. An old man's folly, Nicholas concluded. It appeared that she had made herself an expert on the genealogy of the English aristocracy. In other words, she was an arrant snob. She questioned him closely on his antecedents, insisting on going back several generations. In the end, she called to her husband down the table. Sir Nicholas owns Quentin Park. Did you know that, dear? And then she turned back to Nicholas. My husband's a very keen shot. Sir Oliver looked suitably impressed by his wife's intelligence. Quentin Park, eh? I read an article in the Shooting Times the other day. You have a drive there called the High Beeches, is that right? The High Larches, Nicholas corrected him. Some of the best birds in Britain, that's what they say, Sir Oliver enthused, looking eager and expectant. Oh, I don't know about that, Nicholas protested modestly. But we're rather proud of them. You must come and have a shot at them next time you're home, as my guest, of course. From that moment, Sir Oliver's attitude towards Nicholas altered dramatically. He became affable and solicitous, even going so far as to send the butler to fetch a bottle of the 1954 Lafitte. Oh, you've made a good impression, Geoffrey murmured wryly. H.E. doesn't waste the 1954 on anybody but the chosen few. It was after midnight when Nicholas was at last able to escape from his hostess and rescue Rohan from Sir Oliver and General Obaid. He led her away, supporting her as she limped along fetchingly at his side, avoiding Geoffrey Tennant's knowing and speculative gaze until they had negotiated the first landing of the staircase. "Well, you were definitely the star of the evening," he told her. "You had Lady Bradford purring like a cat," she counterattacked, and he was delighted to hear the faint tone of possessive jealousy in her voice. He had not been the only one. At her door she solved any problems by offering him her cheek, and he kissed it chastely. "Those bosoms," she murmured. "Don't have nightmares about them." And she closed the door behind her. He felt quite jaunty as he went to his own room, but as he opened the door he saw the envelope lying at the threshold. During dinner one of the servants must have pushed it under the door. Quickly he tore open the flap of the envelope and unfolded the pages that it contained. His expression changed as he scanned through them, and he left the bedroom and went back to tap on Royan's door. After a moment she opened it a crack and peeped out at him. He saw the confusion in her eyes, and he hurried to allay her suspicions. "Reply to my fax," he showed her the sheaf of papers. "Are you decent?" "One moment." She closed the door, opened it again only seconds later. "Come in," she said. She indicated the decanter on the cabinet. "Would you like a nightcap?" "I think I need one. We know who runs Pegasus now." "Tell me," she ordered. But he took his time, pouring a scotch, and then smiled at her over his shoulder. "How about a soda water for you?" "Damn you, Nicholas Quentin Harper," she stamped her stockinged foot. "Don't you dare torment me. Who is it?" "When I first met you, you were a dutiful little Arab girl, one who realized the superiority of the male species. Listen to you now. I think I've spoiled you." "I think I should warn you that you are flirting with disaster." She tried to suppress her smile. "Tell me, please, Nicky." "Sit down," he ordered, and took the armchair facing her. He unfolded the fax and then looked up at her. "Mrs. Street has worked fast. In my fax I suggested that she rang my stockbroker in the city. We are 3 hours ahead of Greenwich Mean Time, so it seems that she must have caught him before he left his office. Anyway, she has all the information I asked for." "Oh, stop it, Nicky, or I'll tear my bodice and scream and cause a scandal. Tell me." He rustled the pages and then read, "Pegasus Exploration is registered on the Sydney Stock Exchange in Australia with a share capital of 20 million. "Don't go through all the details," she pleaded. "Just name the man." 65% of the shares in Pegasus are owned by Valhalla Mining Company, he continued imperturbably, and the remaining 35% are owned by Anaconda Metals of Austria. She had given up pleading with him and sat forward in her chair, watching him with a fixed gaze. Both Valhalla and Anaconda are fully owned subsidiaries of HMI, Hamburg Manufacturing Industries. All the shares in HMI are owned by the von Schiller Family Trust, the sole trustees of which are Gotthold Ernst von Schiller and his wife, Ingmar. Von Schiller, she repeated softly, still staring at him. Duryed had him on his list of possible sponsors. He must have read the Wilbur Smith book. I know it's been translated into German. He probably contacted Duryed just the way that you did. But he was not put off as easily as you were by Duryed's denials. That's the way I read it also, Nicholas nodded. It would have been easy to sniff around the Cairo Museum and find that Duryed and you were working on something big. The rest of it we know only too well. But how did he move Pegasus into Ethiopia so quickly? She demanded. That must have been a stroke of luck on von Schiller's side. The luck of the devil. Geoffrey tells me that Pegasus obtained a concession to prospect for copper from President Mengistu 5 years ago, just before he was ousted. Von Schiller was already in place, even before he heard about the scrolls. All it involved was moving the base camp down from the north where they were working and relocating it on the escarpment of the Abbe Gorge to be ready to take advantage of any fresh developments. We'll probably find that Jake Helm is one of his heavies, his dirty trick specialist that he sends to any of his trouble spots around the world. It's apparent that he has Nogo in his pocket. We waltzed right into their arms. Roanne looked thoughtful. It all makes sense. As soon as Helm reported our arrival to his master, von Schiller must have ordered him to set up the Schufter raid on our camp. Oh, sweet heaven, I hate him. I've never laid eyes on him, but I hate him more than I thought I was capable of hating anything or anybody. Well, at least we know who we're dealing with. Not altogether, she demurred. Von Schiller must have had a man in Cairo. Somebody on the inside there. What is the name of your minister? Nicholas wanted to know. No, she denied it instantly. Not Atalan Abu Sin. I've known him all my life. He's a tower of integrity. It's amazing what effect a bribe of $100,000 or so can have on the foundations of even the best constructed tower, Nicholas observed quietly. And she looked stricken. They were the only two at breakfast. Sir Oliver had left for his office an hour earlier, and Lady Bradford had not yet risen to greet the clear, cool Highland morning. I hardly slept last night thinking about Atalan. Oh, Nicky, I can't bear even the suspicion that he might be involved in Duryed's murder. Sorry if I gave you a rough night, but we have to consider all the angles, he tried to soothe her, and then changed the subject. We've wasted enough time here. Pegasus have got a clear run of the field at the moment. I want to get back home and start putting together our own expeditionary force for the return. Would you like me to get onto the airline and make our reservations? She stood up immediately. I'll go off and find a phone. Finish your breakfast first. I have had all I want. She made for the door, and he called after her. No wonder you're so skinny. They tell me anorexia nervosa is a rotten way to go. And he helped himself to another slice of toast and marmalade. She was back within 15 minutes. Tomorrow afternoon at 3:30, Kenya Airways to Nairobi, connecting the same evening with British Airways to Heathrow. Well done. He wiped his mouth on his napkin and stood up. Our car is waiting to take us down to police headquarters to speak to your new admirer, General Obaid. Let's go. There was a police officer waiting to meet them and usher them into the headquarters building. Through the private entrance. He introduced himself as Inspector Gala and treated them with the greatest deference as he led them through to the Commissioner's suite. General Obaid rose to his feet as soon as they entered his office and came around his desk to greet them. He was charming and affable, fussing over Rayanne as he led them through to his private sitting room. Once they were seated, Inspector Gala poured the inevitable tiny bowls of bitter black coffee. After a polite interval of small talk, the General came directly to the business in hand. "As I promised, I won't detain you longer than is absolutely necessary. Inspector Gala here will be recording your statements. Firstly, I would like to deal with the disappearance and death of Major Brusilov. I presume you are aware that he was formerly an officer of the Russian KGB?" The interview lasted much longer than they had expected. General Obaid was thorough but unfailingly polite. Finally, he had their statements typed out by a police stenographer, and after they had read and signed them, the General walked with them as far as the entrance where their car was waiting. Nicholas recognized this as a mark of special favour. "If there is anything I can do for you, anything that you need, please do not hesitate to call upon me. It has been a great pleasure meeting you, Dr. Alsima. You must come back to Ethiopia and visit us again soon. Despite our little misadventure, I have thoroughly enjoyed your beautiful country," she told him sweetly. "You may see us again sooner than you expect." "What a charming man," she remarked, as they settled into the back seat of Sir Oliver's Rolls. "I really like him." "It would seem to be mutual," said Nicholas.